is in Matthew chapter 8. And when Jesus had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and bowed down to him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see to it that you tell no one, but go show yourself to the priests and present the offering that Moses commanded for a testimony to them. And when he had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him entreating him and saying, Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, suffering great pain. And Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. But the centurion answered and said, Lord, I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. Now when Jesus heard this, he marveled and said to those who were following, truly I say to you, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel. And I say to you that many shall come from east and west and recline at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, but the sons of the kingdom shall be cast out into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said to the centurion, go your way, let it be done to you as you have believed. And the servant was healed that very hour. And when Jesus had come to Peter's home, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick in bed with a fever, and he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and waited on him. And when the evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits with a word, and healed all who were ill, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, saying, he himself took our infirmities and carried away our diseases. Now when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to depart to the other side. And a certain scribe came to him and said, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And another of the disciples said to him, Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father. But Jesus said to him, follow me, and allow the dead to bury their own dead. And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him, and behold, there arose a great storm in the sea, so that the boat was covered with waves, but he himself was asleep. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, save us, Lord, for we are perishing. And he said to them, why are you timid, you men of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. And the men marveled, saying, what kind of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? And then when he had come to the other side, into the country of the Gadarenes, two men who were demon-possessed met him as they were coming out of the tombs. They were so exceedingly violent that no one could pass by that road. And behold, they cried out, saying, what do we have to do with you, Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time? Now there was at a distance from them a herd of many swine feeding, and the demons began to entreat him, saying, if you're going to cast us out, send us into the herd of swine. And Jesus said to them, be gone. And they came out and went into the swine, and behold, the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea and perished in the waters. And the herdsmen ran away and went into the city and reported everything, including the incident of the demoniacs. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they entreated him to depart from their region. May God give us ears to hear. As I told the kids during children's time, Christmas really is about the incarnation. It really is about God dwelling in human form, becoming a human being, even more than the story of the shepherds and the story of the infant and the stable scene. It really is about this divinity accepting a human restriction. it really is about a person of the Trinity becoming a human being. How many of you know that God didn't need your permission to become born in human flesh? How many of you aren't bothered that God didn't consult you about whether he was going to be born as a human or not? I think it's interesting in this passage, the disciples marvel that the creation obeys the Creator. It's not surprising at all when you think about it. In 1 John, he says about Jesus, he dwelt among us and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten Son of the Father. The word dwelt, he dwelt among us, literally translates as tabernacled. He tabernacled among us. He tented here. He set up a tent. He came and took a temporary residence. In the Old Testament, King David desires to build a temple as a permanent location for the Ark of the Covenant. We read about it in our scriptural call to worship. The desire for a temple that David expressed. We talked about that in Sunday school last week, and one of the things that struck me about the passage was that David goes to Nathan the prophet with the idea of, let's build a temple because it's not right that I live in a nice cedar-lined house and God's Ark of Covenant is still in a tabernacle of animal skins. And Nathan seemed like a good idea to him. But then God appears to Nathan and speaks to Nathan and says, David's not going to build my temple. He corrects him. The desire was good, but God had to make a little correction. But that's what you see in the Old Testament, is the Ark of the Covenant in a tent. Up until then, before the temple was built, the Ark resided in a temple, in a tabernacle. As the Israelites wandered around the wilderness after their escape from Egypt, the tabernacle could be set up and taken down as they moved around. It was a portable temple. It was a temporary abode. They could trade location. It would kind of like be having church in an RV. You sort of take the church with you. But that would be a problem with having church in an RV. I've seen some big ones, man. I've seen some $250,000 RVs. But there's not room for all of you in it. So we would have to kind of gather around on the outside. David wanted something more permanent. David wanted something more befitting of God's person and character. The Israelites had moved into the promised land. They had conquered it, and they had set up homes and residences for themselves. They had farms and they had buildings that they lived in. And even King David had a palace. And it troubled him that the Israelites and he himself were living in paneled houses while the Ark of the Covenant was still in a tabernacle. Where do you keep your Ark? Where do you keep the Ark that reminds you of God's law and His promises and His provision? Do you keep them in you or in one of the outbuildings? Where does God dwell? What are your housing arrangements for God? Is he a temporary guest who comes and goes? Or is there room for him? I saw a church sign over the holidays that said, we're all innkeepers in regard to Jesus. It was a good thought. Either we'll find room for him to live with us, or we'll keep him in one of the sheds and in the barn. Of course, God would have every right to come into your home and into your life and take over the place. He really owns it all anyway. There's not a single thing that you have that you've obtained for yourself except that God gave you the opportunity and the time to get it. But unlike the government, God respects your property rights. God's not going to force himself on anyone. That's something that's really remarkable about God. The vastness of his power, and he still doesn't impose himself on people. Just look at our text. The leper comes to him, and he wants to know if he's willing. You ever wondered whether God was willing? I love Jesus' answer. I am willing. Of course he's willing. That's the whole reason he came. That's the whole reason he lived and died and rose again, is because he's willing. But God won't impose his will. But if you're willing, he's always willing. The centurion had so much faith, he didn't even need Jesus to be physically present to heal his servant. God was willing there also. He didn't impose himself. Peter welcomed Jesus into his home, and Jesus healed his mother-in-law. I'm still trying to figure out if that's a blessing or not, but sorry, that was a mother-in-law joke. My mother-in-law's not here. I'm sure it was a blessing. I'm sure it was a blessing. Nothing's better than God's loving grace. And really, I think you would know this experience. How much joy do you get when you see God bless somebody else? I think in some ways it's greater than the joy when God blesses you. Because when you really care for somebody and you really love them, and you see God take their hand and lift them up, man, your heart just overflows with gratitude. Next, we see a crowd bring the sick and the demon-possessed to Jesus. They come to him. Literally, they bring others to Jesus, and he heals them all. Jesus gives orders to leave the crowd. Matthew gives a couple of examples of people who want to go with Jesus. The first is a scribe who makes a promise to follow Jesus wherever he goes. And Jesus says this odd thing about not having a home. I don't know. Did the guy think that he could just stay in Capernaum and then kind of go on little jaunties with Jesus? What does Jesus mean that the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head? Was the man saying he would open up his home to let Jesus stay there as long as he's in town? Jesus is saying it's his way of life. And Jesus doesn't force himself on anyone. In fact, with the scribe, he seems to be making it more difficult. It seems to me like the scribe has some faith. I'll go with you, Jesus. I'll follow you anywhere. And Jesus says, no, you won't. Not unless you give up where you're living. Not unless you're willing to be homeless like me. Would you be homeless for Jesus? The second man wants to tarry until his father dies. He probably doesn't mean that his father's on his deathbed and needs to wait for him to die. What he probably means is he needs to let his dad live out the rest of his years, wrap up the affairs, receive his inheritance, and then come follow Jesus. But Jesus doesn't allow for that either. It seems from our text that there's a cost if you're going to travel with Jesus. If you're going to get in the RV tabernacle, there's a price. The last part of the chapter is interesting too. Jesus makes his way to a Gentile region. He's leaving the Jewish crowds and he heads to the rural Gentile area where they know little to nothing of God. And there he's welcomed by two violent demoniacs. And the way that Matthew tells the story, it's not even really the men themselves who greet Jesus, but the demons who come out to meet Jesus. They immediately recognize Jesus as God incarnate. You know, demons don't know everything. They might not have even heard that the Son of God had been born in human flesh. But they were angels before they rebelled with Satan. Before they went along with Satan in his revolt in heaven, they were angels. They would have known God before the creation of the earth. And here they are, minding their own business, tormenting and terrorizing people. And then the Holy Son of God walks up in human flesh. They immediately recognize Him and the power that He wields to do whatever He wants. I think they were surprised. I think that they were used to seeing and recalling and remembering Jesus on the throne of heaven, reigning and glorious. But even in His humble form of a human man, they still recognize God. It's sad that demons do a better job of recognizing God than some human beings do. And the demons are terrified, and they start begging to be sent into the swine and instead of to the place of torment that's been prepared for them. They know what their destiny is. The Bible even says the same. Remember, hell was prepared for the devil and his angels. It wasn't prepared for people. It never was God's intention that people would go to hell. But He needed a place to put the devil and his angels. And they know that's what's in store for them. And they're begging to send us into the swine instead. And Jesus obliges them. And they leave the two tortured souls and they enter the pigs and the herdsmen rush into town and give a report of all that's happened. They tell the events of the deliverance that Jesus has wrought and these two men who were so violent, people wouldn't even use the road. I mean, how bad do you have to be that people won't even go in your neighborhood? They're living in the tombs. Talk about leaving the dead to bury the dead. And the crowds come out, the people come out of the city. And then one of the most astonishing things in all the scripture to me happens. It's something that I struggle to understand and to get my mind around. This great crowd of people comes out from the city and they beg Jesus to leave. Sometimes people prefer the devil that they have to the God they don't know. Because God just might come into your life and change everything. He might not want you to hang around and bury your parents. He might not let you keep your home. Here's the lesson. God is going to do some things, whether we like it or not. God doesn't have to get our permission to calm the storms or raise the storm. It always seems funny to me when people are telling their woes, and it seems that they think that somehow human actions have tied the hand of God. In other words, they're talking about all the tragedy that has befallen them. They're talking about the things that they're struggling with. They talk about the mistakes that they've made or the things that they've done. And what they imply and what they seem to assume is that somehow because of the messed upness of the world or their own foolishness, that somehow God's hands are now tied. and there's nothing anybody can do. Right. As if a person could be so messed up that God couldn't change them. As if there could be something in the world that's so bad that it's permanent. And somehow God's power is intimidated by the insurmountable nature of your problem. There's not a thing in your life that God couldn't remove with less than a flick of His hand. You may want to reconsider whether you have a right understanding of God's power. God's going to do some things whether we like it or not. God is not some passive being who's just waiting on us to get everything right before He can do what He wants to do. God is not some passive being who has no will or desire or intention or power to do the things that He wants to do. Because trust me, whether we're with Him or not, God is out there in the world doing things. He is out there loving people and reaching them. He's out there, whether we're going to be partner with Him or not, reaching them with the gospel of Jesus Christ that they might be changed. God's hands are not tied. God is going to do whatever it is that God has determined to do. There was an incarnation, and not a single person on earth got to vote on it. Now, they tried to vote Him out at the crucifixion. They tried to evict Him from His temporary residence. It turned out that that served His plan and His purpose anyway. He only comes where He's welcome. God does allow us to determine whether we'll welcome Him or not. God will not force you to follow Him. He'll not make you. Truth be told, He won't even overcome all your doubts to convince you. He'll leave you a few just so you can practice faith. We were playing a game last night, and the word Harrison had to guess the meaning of was acquiesce. It means to give consent, to allow, to permit, to give your permission. For God to dwell within us, we have to acquiesce. We have to consent. We have to agree. If we try to conform Him to our expectation, if we try to possess Him and hold on to Him and use Him as our little sugar daddy in the sky, He's going to move on. If we insist that He depart from us because He's too godly for us, He'll step back. He'll leave. He'll still leave a witness. You know, the other Gospels that talk about these two men talk about how the crowds came out and they asked Jesus to leave, and the man wants to go with Jesus, but he says, no, go be a witness. Because God's just faithful like that. But He won't force Himself on you. If you tell Him to back off, He'll back off. But if we acquiesce, if we welcome Him, if we receive Him, He will come and make His home with us. He will come tabernacle in us. There are billions of God's holy tabernacles on this planet. Christians who are indwelt with the presence and the Spirit of God. He's not isolated to a church building. He's not restricted to a temple. But He does live in human hearts that receive Him. God will not impose Himself to live in you, but to enjoy the presence, the peace, and the power of God within us, we have to welcome Him. That's a requirement. Amen.